Well, how long's it been since you had a good bout of Bible trivia? That's not the title of our lesson today, but it is where I'd like to start. Got a couple of questions I want to ask you to test your knowledge of something that kind of leads right into what we're going to be talking about. Who was that Old Testament judge who harnessed a bull to the altar of Baal that was on his father's property and pulled it down, and then cut down the Asherah and used the wood of that thing on the altar to offer a burnt offering to God? You remember that? That incident caused such a stir that this man's name was changed to Jerubbaal. That means let Baal contend against him because he has torn down his altar. Jerubbaal. Now, you remember this fellow really well, but you probably don't remember him for this incident. Rather, instead, you remember him as being the judge who led that little tiny ragtag army against the Midianites and defeated them, as recorded in Judges chapter 6. Gideon. Here's another one. Who was that king of Judah who finally destroyed that bronze serpent that Moses had made almost 700 years previous to that time? This bronze serpent, which God's people had hung on to for all of that time, and in fact, they had even started burning incense to that graven image. You remember the image that had come to be called Nehushtan was something that Moses made at God's instruction in order to cure the people when they looked upon it after they had been bitten by the poisonous snakes that invaded their camp there in the wilderness on the way from Egypt to Canaan. Why, sure, that was King Hezekiah. One more. What is the number one problem in the Bible? Both in terms of the warnings that God gave his people about it, as well as the actual practice of more of God's people, so far as we know, than any other thing. The one sin in the Bible that was more prevalent, apparently, than any other, the problem that more than 1,000 verses in the Bible speak of. What is the sin that more than 50 laws in the first five books of the Old Testament directed against? That sin that is represented as a major, major problem in the Old Testament, but surprisingly also in the New Testament. What is it? The sin of idolatry. This morning, I'd like for you to join me in a study that I'm calling The Gods That We Worship. And I'll tell you right now, it might not be a comfortable study for everyone. Now, preacher, somebody's thinking, surely you're not going to tell us that idolatry is still a problem that we need to be concerned with today? Isn't it true that today in the 21st century, the word idolatry conjures up visions of primitive people bowing down in front of crude statues? And that's kind of our mental picture of what the sin of idolatry is all about. Most of us would gladly admit that idolatry was a real problem in Bible times, but that same number of us would probably say something like, but you know, we've moved beyond that now. In fact, I think a lot of folks today would probably describe the sin of idolatry as antiquated, irrelevant, old-fashioned, out of date, no longer a problem. And if you think that, you're sadly mistaken. One writer puts it this way: idolatry is a huge thing in the Bible. It is dominant in our personal lives, and it is irrelevant in our mistaken estimations. The fact is, though, our culture today is dominated by its own set of idols. And granted, they don't look like that. That is a relic of the past. But that's not a true picture of idolatry today. This morning, as we look into this subject, I'd like to begin with what I consider to be a very logical starting point, and that is the principle behind this sin. What is it that makes this so bad? What is it that makes it such a thing that God in His Word would spend so much time and so much space telling about all of the problems and the results that would come from the sin of idolatry? What is it? Well, what is it that makes idolatry so prevalent? Why is it the kind of thing that evidently people in the Bible, and especially in the Old Testament, had such a major problem staying away from? And why is it still that kind of problem today? Well, let's first of all notice the fact that the principle behind the sin of idolatry is stated with abundant clarity in the text that was read to us just a few minutes ago near the beginning of our service. Exodus chapter 20, verses 1 through 6. In that text, God says, "I am the Lord your God. I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me." Now there's the starting point of the principle behind the importance of the matter of idolatry and the importance of staying away from idolatry. Idolatry is the matter of having something in our lives. And that something could be many things. It could be one thing. It could be an entire lifestyle. It can even be somebody. In our lives, who is more important than God? You shall have no other gods before me, God says. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall... Wait a minute. Listen. We've already acknowledged the fact that we don't have a problem anymore with these graven images. We don't have a problem anymore with the depictions of foreign deities. But here's what gets us. You shall not bow down to serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. God said, I will be, I must be the most important thing in your life. Now, honestly, that makes some folks pretty uncomfortable. If you were to be asked on some occasion, what's the most important thing in your life? And I can really see how that, given the context and the setting, you know, there might be some things that you would say, but really, it doesn't matter that much at all what the context or the setting is. The first answer that every single one of us ought to give, in fact, it ought to be the answer that we blurt out before we can even stop ourselves, the answer should always be, why, it's God. It's God. But the fact is, that's not always the answer that comes out. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. There is only one thing in your life that God does not want. You know what it is? Second place. Second place. God has no desire to be number two in your life. A few years after God gave that statement to his people through Moses, he spoke through Isaiah at a time when idolatry among God's people, particularly the northern kingdom of Israel, was just rampant. And in fact, in Judah as well, it became a major problem ultimately. But in Isaiah chapter 42, verse 8, here's what God says. I am the Lord. That is my name. That's who I am. Now, when God says, that's my name, he's not saying, you need to always be sure and call me Mr. Lord, because that's my name. No, that's not what he's saying. He's saying, we would say it today this way. We'd say, that's who I am. That is the essence of me. I am the Lord. He says, I will not give my glory to another, nor my praise to graven images. Now, I got to be honest with you. We're smack dab in the middle today of a culture, a society that says, you know, the big guy obviously got there through standing on the backs of the little guy. The successful guy doesn't deserve his success. He needs to help pay for our success because he probably got it all by cheating all of us regular people. And so there's this ingrained reflex in us today in our culture to kind of raise one eyebrow when we look at God and say, how'd you get to be so big? And honestly, that's one of the things that keeps God as a minor factor in so many people's lives, because there is that unspoken resentment of anybody who insists on being number one. There never has been a number one like God. God says, I am the Lord. That's who I am. I will not give my glory to another. Basically, God says the rules of sharing don't apply to me. Except, he says, if you'll obey me, I'll bless you beyond your ability to understand. I will not give my glory to another, nor my praise to graven images. Whatever they are, the things that steal God's glory, that steal his praise, they're wrong. They're harmful. And despite all of the clear warnings that God gave his people, there came a time when God's people actually believed that idol gods had powers, had some kind of strength, and they feared them. And Jeremiah addresses this in Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 5. He says, they're like a scarecrow in a cucumber field. They cannot speak. They must be carried because they cannot walk. Do not fear them, for they cannot do harm, nor can they do any good. And in the words of the Apostle Paul in writing to the church at Corinth, for we know that an idol is nothing. But today, sin is still rampant, though we don't see any graven images when we look around. The Apostle Paul explains what modern-day idolatry has become for many people in Philippians chapter 3, verses 18 and 19. Paul said, for many of whom I have often told you and now tell you even with tears, many walk as enemies of the cross of Christ. And here's how he describes them. Listen, they are destitute, or their end is destruction. Their God is their belly. And they glory in their shame with minds set on earthly things. Their God is their belly. They glory in their shame with minds set on earthly things. Folks, I don't believe there's a single passage in all of the New Testament that would any more fittingly describe in so few words the world that we're living in right now, whose glory is their shame, whose minds are set on earthly things. You know, it's hard to picture the world being a more selfish place than it is right now. But it was a problem even in Paul's day, because as he wrote to the church at Corinth in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he described what had been going on with Israel in the wilderness, and particularly he touches on their idolatry even while Moses was up on the mountain receiving the commandments, the law from God. His description seems to so accurately describe a lot of people today. There in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 6 through 12, he says, now these things took place as examples for us, that we might not desire evil as they did. Do not be idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. It's pretty easy to see the principles involved in idolatry when you take a look at it from the biblical standpoint like that. And it's also fairly easy to see how that idolatry is still alive and well today. But let's take just a minute to look at some of the gods that we worship today. Now you understand, this list could go on and on and on for a long, long time. I've just tried to pull some high points from it? How about success and prosperity? That seems to be pretty much right at the top of everybody's concerns. Colossians chapter 3, verse 5 warns us, though, therefore consider the members of your earthly body as dead. Immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, Paul said, which amounts to idolatry. Greed. There is, of course, to many people, this matter of great importance, and that is acceptance. And not too far from that is the desire and the concern for appearance. We could go down the list and include spare time and entertainment. Any of these things ringing a bell with any of us, as so far as the idols, the gods that we worship today? What about technology and all the internet? You know, a good way to get a little bit of a measure for how really important some of these things are to us, just imagine it suddenly disappearing, suddenly no longer being a possibility. I'm convinced if the internet, cable TV, things like that were suddenly to disappear, we'd have some folks that would just die from anguish. I mean, It's pretty clear. You cut somebody's water line and turn their water off, and that's one thing, but you cut the cable TV line or the phone line that carries the internet to their house, you got a major situation on your hands. It's interesting how important some of these things have become. We could keep building that list, and it certainly would have to include things like politics. And even out of that has grown some of the worship for science, even science falsely so called. But what about that biggest one? The biggest idol in the closet? Self. Self and self's desires. I read about this commercial. I haven't seen it on TV, but I'm told that there is a commercial from a credit card company, obviously, and it shows a scene of a setting in a boardroom in some international corporation, and a merger is in progress there. And the CEO says, okay, everything is set and finalized for the 28th. And everybody just sort of nods. But then there's a guy over in the corner pushing a mop, and he's the janitor. And he turns around to the group there sitting around the conference table, and he says, sorry, I'm only available on the 12th. And for a moment there, everybody around the table just kind of looks at each other. And then the CEO says, okay, the 12th it is. The narrator then comes in to the commercial and he says, wouldn't you like the world to revolve around you? And if you'll get this credit card, you can subscribe to whatever details and requirements you want, and they'll even send your bill on whatever day you... But it's an interesting take on the idea that we do all pretty much have within us the desire that everything revolve around us. Self is often our biggest idol. We're out of time, so let me finish this rather quickly, because it's very important that we understand the high price that idolatry makes people pay. Number one, I would suggest that idolatry causes people to ignore God. To ignore God. Look at the Old Testament story and look at all of the details that surround the time when idolatry had become such a problem among God's people. and try to look at it from the standpoint of picturing how things could have been so much better if it weren't for the sin of idolatry. Now look at the New Testament, and maybe in Hebrews chapter 11, where it gives that long list of God's faithful people, and just picture in your mind how that story would have changed if one of those characters, a prime character in that chapter, should have said, "I'm not worried about God." That's what idolatry does to us, though. It makes us ignore God. But not only ignoring God, it also shuts God out of our lives. And that result is very obvious in the lives of those all around us. All we have to do is look and see that God just surely has been completely locked out of a lot of people's lives. Number three, idolatry undermines God and His purpose for us. Because if we've got God shut out, if we're ignoring God, we're certainly not worried about trying to accomplish the purpose that He has for us to accomplish in our lives. And then, of course, obviously, idolatry brings God's judgment. And you know, the story is the same every time you read it in the Bible. Idolatry always brought God's judgment. It's the same warning that's given throughout the New Testament. Idolatry brings God's judgment. Therefore, 1 Corinthians 10:7, Paul said, "Do not be idolaters, as some of them were." 1 Corinthians 10:14, "Therefore, my brethren, flee from idolatry." 1 John chapter 5, verse 21, "Little children, keep yourselves from idols." What's the big deal? Idolatry brings God's judgment. Let me close by calling your attention to this particular verse, Psalm 37 and verse 4. Now tonight, Lord willing, we're going to talk about Psalm 37 and notice three or four things that need to be paid attention to in that passage. But notice what verse 4 says, "Delight yourself in the Lord." Let me say that again. You weren't listening. "Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart." Delight yourself in the Lord. And so obviously the question needs to be asked of every one of us. What am I delighting myself in? What delights me? What delights me more than anything else? Is it the Lord? And if not, why not? And what are you going to do about it? Have you obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ? Belief, repentance, confession, and baptism in order to become a new creature? If you haven't done that, why not do it today? If you have done that but have become unfaithful in your service to God and you've got some other gods that are trying to move in and take over, kick them out and come back to God. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to respond as we stand together and sing this song.